Just one thing, I did watch a little bit of the president's speech a couple weeks ago. He said it was going to be a short speech. So we can keep this short if you promise not to applaud every 2 minutes and do some standing ovations. And we'll be able to keep it down as well. It's a little slow getting my document up here, but we'll talk a little bit. My name is Ken Perry. I am born and raised in Fairbanks. However, I did not go to college like most of you. I went into the ministry shortly after school, so didn't get the benefit of higher education. However, I have learned a great deal. After I came back from some missionary work after about 12 years to Fairbanks, I settled in and was asked to take over the Fairbanks branch of what was then called Paratex Pied Piper. And it was owned by a family friend of mine. And so I did that in 85, I believe it was. And then in 92, I was asked to move down and take over the whole company for the state, which I did. And several years ago, I became the primary owner of it. My wife and my son and I own the corporation. Pied Piper started in about 1965 in Sitka. There was a retiring Coast Guardsman who wanted to start a rat control business because they definitely had them at the Coast Guard base. So he started a rat control business called Pied Piper. Some years later, as it kept spreading through the state, it went through a couple of family friends of mine and eventually to me. During that time, they adopted the name Paratex Pied Piper when they joined a network of independent companies on the West Coast, which came under the envelope of Paratex. Through all that time, we were constantly having people say, we can't find Pied Piper in the phone book. And so after I took ownership, because the thing had never gotten off the ground, I switched it back to Pied Piper slowly because money doesn't grow on trees. I'm just about down. All I've got left is my signage on the building to get rid of Paratex altogether. So that's a little bit about the company. I was asked to come in and speak a little bit about common insect pests, and I'll throw a little bit of other mammalian pests in there too, that we see in the state of Alaska that certainly you know far more about scientifically than I would do. I am looking this winter at reaching the goal that I've always had of becoming an associate entomologist through a program that's available now to people in my category. Probably for many years, our strongest invading pest, we're fortunate here in Alaska not to have a lot of pests anyway as far as invading pests. In fact, we have very few invading pests, mm-hmm. when we speak about that. We have a huge number of insect-related species, mammalian and the like, in Alaska, but not too many of them are invasive. And so a lot of our work is probably more a result of introduced pests, that is things that are carried in rather than are invasive. Probably in the way of invasives, you're talking about carpenter ants, spiders, earwigs to a certain extent are the most common invasive. And then of course we have a side business in the summer of treating trees for aphid and for many years for spruce bark beetle control. So speaking of carpenter ants, you probably get a lot of calls on those. Predominantly, they were created to help the log that falls on the ground of the forest floor to go back to the dirt. And they, when they become numerous, they're too close to a house. They don't know the difference between a wet log and a damp, even kiln-dried lumber environment. And so we do a tremendous number, always have. It was always probably our biggest invasive pest species. Last year, I think about 325 individual jobs for that species alone. We run anywhere from 250 to 300 every year on that. Now this is just data from actual sold jobs. Obviously we answer a lot of phone calls. I have a policy when it comes to my business that I don't sell business based on fear. I don't like to take people's money based on fear. If it's something they can do themselves, I'll tell them. And so we get a lot more calls than our data might show. But of course, carpenter ants are a big problem. Fortunately, they don't do the damage that, say, a termite would do. It takes a while for that to happen. I've only seen two or three times significant damage in the thousands of dollars, both of which, interestingly enough, were up in Fairbanks. One was a house where they had eaten away the rim joists and most of the portion of the floor joist that hung on the rim joist, and the house was in danger of falling in. And the other was a flat roof that had been added a pitched roof to it, and they'd eaten away the first three trusses from the outside in. And the reason we don't see that kind of damage is, number one, people tend to see them, unlike termites. They tend to see them, they know they've got a problem, they take care of it. We don't have termites, of course, which makes us unique in the U.S. as far as being the only state. There are some states that have very few. We have none yet. That's a business that I would love to get into. I didn't even learn about termites until I happened to visit my brother-in-law's farm in Kentucky and took the time to go out and watch them in action and actually saw them. Probably the second most invasive species we see, which again is not insect, but is mice. We do 200 to 300 calls for mice. Now this is besides all of our commercial work. We have a number of commercial accounts, restaurants, hotels, storage locations, all kinds of business like that, where we go on a regular basis to keep them from getting a problem or to control a problem that's always going to be recurring. But in the way of new calls, we average anywhere from 250 to 300 calls a year on mice. The voles, of course, are on the increase right now. We had a huge peak in Fairbanks a couple of years ago. Anchorage is right behind that. I think it peaked last year. We'll have to wait and see what happens this year on the calls. Again, because voles to me are not really a pest, I try to encourage people to just leave them alone. Roaches, probably our second most common pest, although again, they're not invasive from the outdoors. We have a huge roach problem. When I was a kid, growing up in Fairbanks, my dad was a plumber by trade. And I remember working, if anybody's from Fairbanks, the word Two Street might mean something to you. Second Avenue was a row of bars. And interestingly, from there to the military base was very close. And there was a utilidor that ran along Two Street out to the military base. And I remember being in the basement of those bars from time to time with my dad doing plumbing or furnace work and seeing these insects. I had no idea what they were until I got into this business. Oh, that's what they were. Most of our roach problems are in restaurants and in multifamily dwellings. We have a serious problem here in Anchorage. Anchorage, of course, is the bull of everything in Alaska anyway. But a lot of roach issues, almost always the German roach. We very seldom see other species. Once in a while, one will be introduced, and somebody who's taking a trip down south might bring back a spooky ground from Hawaii, an Asian or Australian or something like that. Very often they get out of control. When that happens, it's usually because of a unique environment situation. One was a house in Fairbanks where they had heated pipes down that ran the length of the floor. That was when we were first learning how to do the floor heat, and they allowed the crawl space to be far too warm and humid, and that allowed them to grow. Another was in a condo complex here in Anchorage, same situation, extremely warm and humid environment, and so they had a bad case of, I believe that was an Asian cockroach. Spiders run a close third. Spiders, again, I don't really get too upset about spiders. I try to encourage people not to get too upset about them. Basically, for the most part, they're outside creatures. They're actually beneficial. They keep the insects down. When we do have to do a spider job, we don't do that many, 30 to 60 a year. We try to target from outside so we're not having to apply pesticide inside. We want to get as much kill as we can on the knockdown because of spiders' unique nature. They don't react to pesticides quite the way insects do. And so you basically want to hit them to kill them. And so we want to kill as many as we can. If you're trying to do it inside, there are so many places for spiders to hide that you're applying a tremendous amount of product. And I don't think the cost or the risk is worth one or two spiders a week. And frankly, after we're there, they're probably still going to see that many. An upcoming problem, it's been rising for the last probably 8 years, is the clover mite. This building has a significant clover mite problem. These little creatures that live in the grasses are becoming a substantial issue for people, and they are somewhat hard to kill. There are not that many pesticides that are listed for mites, miticides, if you will, and their nature of hiding in practice and so forth, and the foundations makes them hard to reach. Fortunately, and I try to tell people this, once they get inside, they're of no danger to you. They don't bite. They're basically just looking for water, and they're going to die anyway because they've already done their egg laying and so forth like that for the next run of them. Same thing is true of the strawberry root weevil, which is similar and probably in the same area of numbers as the clover mite is. Again, once they come inside, they're generally not going to be an issue, and they're even harder to kill than the clover mite. So we get a lot of those types of calls. The silverfish, again, not an exterior invader so much as, and silverfish and firegrass, I should say. It's not so much an exterior invader as a introduced species. Again, a lot because of the nature of them in hot and humid environments. The Fairbanks University used to have a tremendous problem in their utilidors with those. I remember doing a job at the library up there in one of the museum where they would get into the cardboard boxes and so forth like that that made them a real challenge. In fact, one of the times I was doing the library late at night, I was in there doing some work, and of course they locked the doors, and I was going to let myself out, and I went out the wrong door. And the door I went out was, of course, an Arctic entry. It locked behind me, and the door to the outside had a sign that says, "Do not open, alarm will sound." So I said, "Well, I'll just wait here a while. Somebody's bound to come by." Nobody did. So after about an hour, I said, "Well, we'll just deal with the fire department." Pushed the door, no alarm. Went home. Felt sorry for myself. My favorite insect pest is the wasp. I like them because being in this business for close to 30 years, it's about the only pest that can hurt me back. And although the last couple of years I've stepped back a little bit, my son and my other technicians are doing most of them. The highest number of actual nests I did was about 5 years ago, I think, where I took out personally about 288 wasp nests here in Anchorage alone. And they are very cyclical. Obviously, they follow, obviously, the source of food, the weather, all kinds of things. Every time I think I've figured out an invasive species or a outside species as to what's going to happen the next year, I find out how little I know. I try to predict the wasps, say, well, it's a cool winter, not much snow cover, so a lot of the females are going to die, and so we won't see much, and then bang, we have a record year. And then we'll have a heavy snowfall, a lot of good coverage, and it'll be a low year. So I'd say, well, we had a heavy aphid activity, so we'll see lots of wasps, but the weather was cool, and so we didn't. One nice thing about the wasps is we get a lot of calls in the wintertime with people who have wasp nests, especially in real estate transfers. In fact, there's that couple that do it weekly introduction in the newspaper about real estate transfers. Contact me, and they quoted me in regard to those, that if you see a wasp nest in an attic or something or a crawl space in the wintertime, don't worry about it. Enjoy it. It's done. It's not going to be reused. Don't panic. Sometimes the owners or the purchasers will make them take it out. Which I said, well, you know, if I go up in your crawl space, I run a risk of falling through your sheet block to take out a nest that's dead. If you want to pay me to do that, that's fine. So I don't do it so much anymore. Growing issues, obviously the cluster fly issue, and I know on the Kenai last year there was a lot of discussion about that. We've had cluster flies here for quite some time. They puzzle me a great deal, and I'm looking forward to some of you doing some more research on the Alaska cluster fly problem. Because we know the way that cluster flies breed and where they breed, we know we've always had earthworms, not in huge populations though. What puzzles me is the huge number of cluster fly problems we get in some of our high rises here in Anchorage. The ConocoPhillips building, constantly surrounded by asphalt, has a huge cluster fly problem every year in various levels of that building. Some of the other locations, huge cluster fly problems with very little grass in the area. So I still remain puzzled about that. With cluster flies, again, I hesitate to use a pesticide because all you can do is kill what you see. Most of them are huddled up in the insulation area. This building has had a problem. The problem we have with using a pesticide, too, in those types of buildings is most of our recent construction, the last 30 years, they have used the drop ceiling as the return air vent for the heating system, which means if you apply a pesticide up in there, it's going to get into the heating system, so we don't want to do that. So generally, we recommend trapping, and I developed a system that I'm real proud of, because cluster flies like to cluster. I take a dead fly, put it on a sticky trap, put it in the window, and the others keep coming to it and get stuck there. So I have given that one away for free, and a lot of people are using that one as well. Probably our biggest issue right now, and it's truly sad, is the bed bug issue. The numbers are just amazing to me here in Alaska. We see these reports from the two big companies, Terminix and Orkin, whose work we used to do up here, and then they just got too cheap and I couldn't do it anymore, of the bed bug cities. Those numbers are based on how many calls their offices in those areas get. I think if they had those same numbers based on population area, Anchorage would easily come in well above most of those cities. Population-wise, the number of calls we get, let alone the jobs we do, is just amazing to me. We've always had bed bugs from time to time here. Looking back through the records, I found bed bug jobs as far back as 1968, mostly hotels. You know, people come in and moving. And of course, you've always had the swallow bug from time to time. And the bat bug, which we're not able to positively prove until a couple of years ago. But in 2008 is when we started to see the huge influx. From my numbers from 2000 to 2008 show a modest growth. 2008, it really hit hard. And since 2008, my initial starts, these are jobs initially started, not counting the follow-ups, these jobs are running, let's see, what's my number? 1,577% since 2008. And that's just the jobs we do. I do a tremendous number of phone advice. I get calls from all over the state, and I'm constantly answering people's questions about bed bugs, as is my whole staff. And a lot of them, number one, can't afford it. If they're in the bush area, they just can't afford us to come out there. So forth. And so that's just the numbers of jobs we do. What is interesting that's come up along with that is the number of retail sales we've done. I started tracking and dividing my retail sales from bed bug retail to general pest retail. And our bed bug retail since 2008 is up 1,670%. Just sales to people trying to do it themselves. Some of them are successful. We have no trouble giving them advice, talking them through it, assisting them how to do it, because we realize that not everybody can afford us, and we are not inexpensive, unfortunately. Got to pay for this fancy time. And so I know you get a lot of calls on those. The entomology is amazing on these creatures. Their resistance is phenomenal. I do not do heat treatment, except for container heat treatment. I have a building that I have made certain is tight enough and insulated enough that I can maintain the heat at the temperatures I want. People bring me furniture and the like, and I will heat treat them. As far as doing room or building or apartment heat treatments, I looked at that very carefully, consulted with a couple of major entomologists on the East Coast. Because of the structure of our buildings, the temperature of our buildings, or of our environment, and so forth, it was not a good choice. And the results I get being in the position I am in the pest control industry here in Alaska, a number of complaints and callbacks I'm hearing from that type of treatment are phenomenal, as I thought they would be. So we do pesticide in conjunction with mechanical. And I won't bore you with all of that, but we've had very, very good success in doing that until the bed bugs develop more resistance and more adaptability, and we'll have to make changes along with them. I was asked to comment a little bit about Ekman's syndrome, delusional parasitosis. I love that one. And I know all of you have probably at one time dealt with that one person who just swears they've got bugs growing under their skin. And it's hard to convince them it is not true. And that's what the syndrome is. You cannot convince them, because as far as they're concerned, because the brain is such a unique organ, It is there, and it is real, and you cannot tell them it is not real. I do a tremendous number of people who walk in and want various things identified, and I maintain a microscope. People will bring me samples, I'll look at them, or I'll go look at their place. I had one a few years ago for a landlord whose tenant was complaining of these very small bugs. And he had people in there treating, which I told him, you don't treat for things you can't see. She still wasn't happy. I went in, interviewed her, looked at the bugs she was seeing, which were little black spots all over her stove, which looked like pepper to me. Her bed, top, beneath, under, was covered with diatomaceous earth. She was taking capsules, time capsule pills, opening them up and dumping them, putting diatomaceous earth in them, and taking them. That's how concerned she was about this invisible bug she had. And she got so upset when I wouldn't treat. Years ago in Fairbanks, I did that one time. Had a man whose mother, elderly, had this problem. He said, well, just go in and treat with water. Just treat something. So I went ahead and went in and treated, and she was fine. She felt so much better. But I felt so guilty, so bad, that I told myself I'd never do that again. It's just, it's not right. You don't lie to people, you tell them the truth. Had one person come in one time a couple of years ago. His eye was so badly scratched, his legs and arms so badly scratched that blood was coming out from these insects that were under his skin. He brought me in these samples, and I started looking. He had a box of samples this deep. And being a kind person, I started looking through everything. He pulled this, and I said, this is some of my sputum. I says, okay, well, let's take a look. He says, I don't find anything. When he reached the box, he said, this is some of my excrement. I says, I'm sorry. I says, at this point, I can't go any further. First of all, I'm not going to see anything. And second of all, you just don't have a problem. And I asked him, have you heard of delusory paralysis? He said, oh yeah, that's what my doctor said, but I don't believe it. I says, well, you know, there's nothing more I can do for you except tell you in my personal opinion. One lady came in just this past year, swore she had these little bugs. She brought in sample after sample out of her car, out of her house, out of her storage place. Again, looking through everything. And she was just so upset. And that's the sad part. They're so upset. You want to do something for them, but you can't. The last one I had brought me in a box of samples this deep from her well, from the pond outside of her house, from all through her house. She said her husband and brother told her she was crazy, but she knew she had these. Her doctor told her she was crazy, but she knew she had these. I went through everything. I always do, because it's not fair to them to not at least look. Always look. I had to tell her, no, there's nothing there. These things are on the rise. Another one that we get, which is not necessarily the syndrome, but certainly closely related, is itchy skin reactions. People call, it used to be before we had the bed bug problem, they call say, I got spiders. I got spider bites all over me. I said, well, tell me a little bit about it. Have you seen these spiders? No, I haven't seen these spiders. And they say, well, I got these bites all over me. I says, how often do you get them? And how many do you get at a time? And they'll tell me, well, first of all, spiders are not going to bite unless you do something to them. Spiders are by nature reclusive. And so you're not going to get spider bites unless you do something to them. Second of all, they're not going to bite over and over again. That would require several spiders, and if you can't see them, they're not there. This one company in town has sprayed this house for this lady about 10 times, applied pesticide all through her house within a period of about 5 months, 10 times. And she still had them, and she didn't. Yeah, and so it used to be spiders until the bed bug thing hit, and then it was bed bugs. And again, about 75% of the calls I get from around the state, in an interview, I can often tell whether it's likely they have bed bugs from some of that same criteria. You talk about they've never seen them, and yet they got all these bites, and so they got all those bites, you're going to see them. If you've got several bites at night, you know, 20, 30 bites, you're dealing with multiple insects, you should be able to see them. If it's happening every night, you can multiply that by four, because they feed every 4 to 8 days, and you're going to see them. So we deal with a lot of that, and it's sad. And unfortunately, we have people who want to take the short route and tell people. I had a doctor last year who told a woman, and they do this quite frequently, unfortunately, oh, those are bedbug bites. And then he told her they get under your skin and continue to feed. I don't need scientists like that scaring people. So anyway, that's a little bit about what we're seeing. We expect to see more. Alaska is a changing environment, no question about that. I appreciate all the field work that you people do. Some of you have nothing to do with structural pest control, but I rely on some of the papers I see coming from your industry and from your educational resources. Sometimes we do a certain amount of ornamental tree work, which is helpful, and I've sat with some in years past during the spruce bark beetle epidemic, sat with some, actually done interviews in conjunction with some in the Forest Service when that was a bad problem. So that's a little bit about what I do and what I don't do. So may I answer any questions for you? May I have a cup of water? Sir.
Hey, can you tell me more about, I hadn't heard of the clover mites. That was a name I hadn't heard. Can you tell me what group those are in? I don't know.
I don't recall the scientific etymology of it. I apologize.
You had some specimens from 1944.
I don't know. Wikipedia came up with.
I bet they're not still alive.
What no, they're in the museum.
They're tetrachelid.
But it would be great to get some fresh ones. Okay.
Sure.
We have them in our back room.
You can see a lot of them.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
They're not
little red things. They're the ones where they come in a lot of times through the windowsills. Little red bumps you see on white paper. You squish them, and they leave a red spot. And so that's a little aggravating. And they come in large numbers. And so people start panicking.
They feed on clover?
Yeah, I believe so. Grassy material.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty general.
Another question.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I really enjoyed your talk.
Oh, yeah.
Great. You were a minister at one time?
Yeah, I still am. I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Now I hear that spruce beetle, there have been several spruce beetle reports in that region. Have you been treating, is there an increased number of trees or treatments that have been requested for this urban area?
Well, we have to keep in mind we've always had spruce beetles here. And there's always been a certain amount of die-off. Generally, under normal situations, it's just short.
Yeah, how many do you normally, how many reports do you get in Anchorage per year, would you say, for...
I don't generally get reports as often as the local co-op extension does, or a tree expert would. I still do jobs from time to time. Yeah, I have some clients do it every 2 years.
Have you had an increase in jobs?
No. A lot of times, if they call because they lost one, I will ask enough questions to find out what the likelihood is that they need to be concerned about it, what the health is of the other trees, and will advise against it. A lot of times, too, they don't realize that there's nothing they can do to save that tree that was there. The last big job we did was a condominium project down in Valley of the Moon, and that one I tried to talk them out of, but they insisted on doing it because they lost a very beautiful tree in the middle of the park area. So now it's way down. We have some clients, as I said, that will do every 2 to 3 years based on Dr. C's, the research he did many years ago on seven, the last 2 to 3 years. And so a lot of them are just gone, like an insurance policy, every 2 to 3 years. A lot of the old growth trees are gone anyway. Same thing happened on the Kenai, just lost a lot of the food. Sir.
So I'm interested in the, there are two species you mentioned that we don't have good records for, or even any records for. So one, the first is the earwigs. So we have a few records from Southeast Alaska, but you're getting them here in Anchorage?
Yes.
Because I would love to get a couple specimens. Do you guys get them at Cooperative Extension too?
Yeah, I have a few.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's one that I have nothing but Southeast records for. And the other is the silverfish. So we have fire rats like throughout the buildings in Fairbanks. and but I've never seen an actual silverfish in Alaska. So that's another one. Mm-hmm. And they are sometimes hard to tell apart. Some
yeah.
people confuse them.
Yeah.
But you're getting...
In some cases, we don't bother to do the ID, uh-huh. you know, because the result is the same. But I have personally identified three-line silverfish uh-huh. in Fairbanks as well, by the way.
So yeah, so I'd love to get some specimens.
I will do my best to gather some for you.
Great. And I also, with similar questions, I'm interested in seeing some cluster flies if you're getting some this spring, because we picked up one species on the Kenai, but that's one of several that we could that wouldn't be a surprise to see here.
So are there various subspecies of that fly in Alaska?
So far we have there's a Polenia is the genus of cluster flies, and we have just picked up one species on the Kenai Peninsula. And it's not the cluster fly, it's a cluster fly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a common name.
Yeah.
You could call it the vagabond cluster fly. But you could have, could very likely have others in Anchorage.
Well, I would love some help on that because I have a huge number of clients that are in the building management industry. And it's people are complaining and there's just not much they can do. They did, contact somebody on the West Coast who actually shuts the heating system down and sprays those areas and then turns back up again. I have still stayed away from that. I'm not comfortable, number one, that it's going to hit everywhere it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, even with pyrethrum, which dissipates quickly, there's always a certain amount of residue. And not just from the pyrethrum alone, from the inerts.
Sure.
That if somebody had an allergy that I didn't know about, I feel bad. We always, anytime we do an inside pest control anyway, any pesticide that involves an aerosol or liquid, we require a 4 to 8 hour vacancy, 4 to 8, because we have no idea that somebody might not have an allergic reaction.
Sure.
They don't even know about it. Okay. Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks.
Yeah, and keep in mind that we're happy to, the whole community is happy to help with IDs if you do get something weird or, you know, you want to...